I'm George from Ireland. Welcome back to the channel yet again. This video is about the emergency in India, as they call it, because it's 50 years, as it was declared, 50 years yesterday. And that was when Indira Gandhi was Prime Minister. I wasn't even aware of this until I went to India on my gap year and started reading about modern Indian history, the way India had a flirtation with a dictatorship in the mid-70s. So Mrs. Gandhi in the Congress Party, the daughter of the founding Prime Minister of India, Jawaharlal Nehru, had become Prime Minister after the death of the second one, Lal Bahadur Shastri, in 1966. And she'd just defeated Pakistan, helped Bangladesh become independent. And the way she was riding high, a huge landslide victory just after that in 1972. But then the oil price crisis after the Yom Kippur War, when Gulf Arab countries stopped producing oil for a few months, hit rich Western countries badly, but it helped developing countries like hit a country like India, a developing country, very, very badly indeed. Now, half a century ago, economically, India was way behind the West. There was a lot of severe poverty, like malnutrition. Very, very people had cars. Most didn't have electricity, running water. It's just not like today, when there isn't really a technology gap. And still, there was still a considerable number of children who didn't get to go to school at all. And just because the woman was prime minister doesn't mean there was gender equality in practice. So it all went back to her having used electricity or stolen electricity for some of her rallies and her Ray Bareilly constituency a few years earlier. And she was going to be unseated. So then she proclaimed there was a state of emergency. And she had, fortunately for her, she had the president aside, Fakhruddin Ali Ahmed, who was a Muslim, one of his four Muslim prime ministers of India, congressman who'd been in jail in the British era for anti-colonial activities. And fortunately, she persuaded him, or fortunately from her point of view, to sign a state of emergency into effect, citing Article 352 of the Constitution because of the internal disturbance. So that meant that there was rule by fiat. A lot of civil liberties were suspended, particularly habeas corpus, as in the right not to be sent to prison unless you're found guilty of a crime and so on. He introduced censorship of the press and so forth. Up to 100,000 people were incarcerated without trial, without charge. It's quite extraordinary. And the internal disturbance was actually very little. I mean, almost no one had been killed up until this point. So partly she'd been very popular and suddenly become very unpopular. Her second son, Sanjay Gandhi, the one who was really involved in politics those days, he was driving forward a highly contentious campaign for vasectomies because India was reaching population explosion. And they realized that to get this down, the fertility rate is about six. It's much easier to sterilize a man than a woman. And for small cash payments, would men do it? No, they wouldn't. Sometimes they were just simply kidnapped by his thugs, and a vasectomy was performed on them. And people say, well, they had one or two children. That's disgraceful. I've got to have loads. Some Hindu men were saying, you've got to have a son to light my funeral pyre, stuff like that. So as you mentioned, there was a lot of backlash against this. So some people said, well, India had experimented with parliamentary democracy for almost 30 years. It was nice. It was lasted. It's becoming a dictatorship like almost everywhere else in India, sorry, in Asia. You got to remember just how unusual democracy was in the 70s. The whole of Eastern Europe was dictatorships, most of Latin America, almost every country in Africa, and so on. So goodness, it was proclaimed. And the army, the navy, the air force, the police, the civil service, they stayed on her side. So it went actually remarkably smoothly. So she'd imprisoned a lot of people who had been exalted for their role in bringing Indian independence, for peace corps campaigning, strikes, and so on, willing to serve prison time under the British Raj, like Jayaprakash Narayan, others. Morarji Desai became prime minister briefly afterwards. George Fernandes, a trades union leader from Mumbai, later defense minister around 2000, Atal Bihari Vajpayee, who later went on to be prime minister in the late 90s, Lal Krishnan Advani, who later helped to found the Bharatiya Janata Party, and so on. Goodness. So she outlawed many other political parties, Jamiat-e-Islami, the Islamic fundamentalist group, Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, literally the National Volunteers Movement, which was a hardline Hindu organization, and the Communist Party of India, Marxist, and others. So, wow, for the slightest offense, you'd be getting 2 years imprisoned. Now, in some states, the state government was suspended and there was simply president's rule. So the president has dictatorial powers in states when there's said to be severe disorder. So despite being kicked out of a member of parliament, she still managed to be prime minister and therefore just wasn't accountable to things. So she brought in price controls to try and ensure there was lower inflation because oil prices, well, that's the real thing. As I pointed out, very few Indians had cars, but most Indians purchased goods that were transported by truck or ship. Trains had been coal. They were becoming diesel or sometimes electrified, and that were the electric ones were often from burning oil. Oil burned at power stations, and the Indian middle class was quite small in those days, was 20% of the population maximum. They usually had electricity. People often went by bus, so it was impacting in people indirectly. It was going to push people from poverty into starvation in some cases. Anyway, controversially, she brought in some sort of tax breaks for the wealthy. This is the days of the license Raj. You had to get a license to import things. The idea was autarky, to import as little as possible, not be sending money out of the country. And there were price controls in very few places with telephones. It was a very, very different era. It was much more cut off from the rest of the world. It's not like that you'd have all the technology in India that you'd have in any advanced Western economy. Because obviously middle-class Indians have largely the same, standard of living as middle-class people in Ireland. And I remember, well, Southern Ireland, we had our own emergency. That was the Second World War when civil liberties were suspended. But this is mostly for partisan purposes because the threat to India wasn't that great. There were going to be some strikes and some demonstrations and so on, but there was really no significant risk of civil war or anything like that. It was simply to keep her in power. But people thought it's meant to be a temporary measure. These have a habit of becoming permanent. Anyway, there were other very contentious things that we're doing. Sanjay, the one her son was involved in politics. Rajiv was just an Air India pilot back then, wanted to stay out of politics. He started knocking down parts of Delhi to renovate it and things like that. So newspapers were published. They did stop the publication of newspapers for a few days after they're seizing their printing presses, so they couldn't inform the public really what was going on. And well, they were allowed to print again, and certain articles were censored, so they would print blank space where things were censored, so the public would realize what was happening. Goodness. So that's all very bad news. The surprising things, after 21 months, this expired, an election went ahead, and she was kicked out. And things went according to the constitution. That was what's surprising. And that's when Morarji Desai, it was a Charan Singh, came in, two prime ministers, one after the other, for about 3 years. And then she had lost a seat. She ate humble pie. She showed contrition. And she thought that the other parties would fall out with each other squabbling. And so it came to pass. And then she was able to win in 1980, come back as prime minister. She wasn't even an MP for a few years. But sadly, there's a record essence of what's going on. Narendra Modi, he was never in the Congress Party. Was he even in prison in the 70s, being seen as a Hindu nationalist? But there's these sedition and anti-terror laws and the Unlawful Activities Prevention Act and so on that really have misdefined terrorism and so on. And they're used against dissidents, against journalists, against peaceful protesters. People are held in pretrial detention for months in many cases. So it's really an abuse of power. Some people don't like the Citizenship Amendment Act, which privileges Hindus over non-Hindus. Some Muslims being deprived of their Indian citizenship because they can't provide paperwork and things like that. So the police raiding media outlets that are uncongenial to the Modi administration, like the BBC, NDTV, NewsClick, and so on. So they're then tarring people as anti-national if they question the Narendra Modi's government's narrative. So you can see there's a declension in press freedom there. The internet sometimes shut down in various places and so on. Spying on anyone who's critical of them, various dissidents, journalists, opposition politicians and so forth. So the Foreign Contribution Regulation Act being used to prevent non-governmental organizations, human rights groups in particular, accessing funding, taking away licenses from organizations that are critical of the government. So, wow, there's a lot of hate speech, outlawing the hijab, so taking away people's personal liberty. And that is very troubling. Well, I really hope India gets back to civil liberty. Ironically, is Congress are the good guys in politics. So there's no point in penalizing them for the wrongdoing of half a century ago.